welcome to Age of Minority, a podcast for youth about the gospel. I'm your host, Jaquel, here with my co-host, pastor, and dad, Sean.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Hey.
Hi.
Oh. Hey.
Hey.
What's going on, girl?
Not much, not much.
Yeesh.
I mean, I don't know. I guess some stuff. Work is busy. That's the busy thing in my life. Got lots going on with work.
You on that new track.
Starting a new project.
How's that new track going?
It's going pretty well.
Just starting started. The big email blast went out. I got blasted.
Oh, you did? Oh,
I got
good.
Blasted. Well, I think it was from you. I'm on your email list.
Oh, yes. I
don't
I do
any of that other stuff. But I mean, like, when my daughter has an email list, I subscribe.
Yes, I did send it out. Yep, starting a new writing program, a college alternative program for serious nonfiction writers. Anyways, how's that soda? Looks pretty tasty.
What was so funny about me taking a drink of soda?
Well, I just thought we were having a, we were going back and forth.
I thought you were going to talk for a little bit there. I mean, you're usually pretty long-winded. No,
well, definitely between the two of us, I am 100% the long-winded
you're
one
the
on
talker,
man.
I'm like just so quiet.
Yeah, well, you're just here for the laughs.
I'm just here for the laughs. Somebody's got to provide the laughs.
Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, so work is busy, but everything else is pretty good. I'm getting ready to... I need to talk to you, Mom. Confirm a date for Lucy's first birthday party.
It's
going to be 2 months late.
Non-COVID birthday.
Yep, a legal gathering. now that we can have 10 people together, I finally get to throw her a birthday party.
Hey, Jaquel, Romans 13.
Guess what the theme is, Dad? One in a melon. And it's going to be watermelon themed.
I love it.
She has a little tank top that says that, but I got pink and green balloons. I have a little pink skirt for her high chair. We're going to do, like, I'm going to have watermelon candy, sliced watermelon, and then just do hamburgers and hot dogs.
That baby makes my heart melt. Look at this. Yeah, I keep changing my wallpaper, as you well know.
Yes, to various pictures of Lucy.
This is my one right now.
Aw, that's like, pretty cute.
Hey, Grandpa, what's going on? It's like I can hear her saying things in these pictures. Her face is so expressive.
She is very expressive. In this picture, she's wearing like a backwards baseball cap and a little Roots sweatshirt.
Just like you were at that age. You used to be so cute. What happened to you?
I transferred all my cuteness to my child.
Yeesh, that baby. I mean, there's two things I like to talk about in life. That baby and Mr. Baby. Because who can't get enough of Mr. Baby? Mr. Baby had a traumatic time today. Did you hear about it?
Mom said that he was like going around crying.
Oh, he knows something's up, man. That cat is brilliant. It's a genius cat.
Oh, yeah, but
he does know something's going
on. He senses that there's change in the air.
He knows stuff is crazy. We're moving things and things are leaving that weren't there before, and now the piano's gone and everything's rearranged, and then all of a sudden he's going to be gone. Hopefully.
Relocated. Just to clarify.
Not gone
that
for good.
Seemed pretty dark.
But gone from this house, along with us and all of our possessions.
Exactly. To an apartment.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yep.
That's strange.
Yep.
The last time we lived in an apartment was, 20 years ago? 25 years? 30 years ago?
Well, hey, join the club. It was the same amount of time for me since I lived in an apartment until I had to get one last fall.
It's been a long time.
It's true.
Yeah, you did have a very short stint in an apartment.
I don't remember it at all.
You were only a wee tiny little baby.
Yes.
Yeah, so no, lots going on for us, that's for sure. If we sell this house in this crazy market here in Nova Scotia, Canada.
The question is just how much more are you going to get than asking price?
Yeah. And also, am I going to turn off my notifications?
That's the question we ask pretty much every week. And most of the time, the answer is no, or at least not soon enough.
Do not disturb. 2 hours. We're good. Okay.
I hope we can get these episodes done in 2 hours.
You never know. It could be a long go. So, yeah. Anyway, lots going on in my life, you know.
Hey. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Wow,
yeah,
exciting, exciting times.
Yeah.
Man, I feel like when we have nothing to talk about, we spend forever talking about it. But when we actually have major things going on, we don't really talk about it for
We're like
long.
The Seinfeld of podcasts. We talk about nothing. It's crazy how that works.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Well, should we just get into the topic du jour?
I don't know. I haven't come up with a theme. I haven't come up with my theme song yet.
Oh,
I need some more time.
I
still think like my last one was one of my favorites.
I think the last one was definitely better than several of the other ones.
Because you know what time it is.
I do know what time it is.
Bible book, Bible book. Oh, Bible, 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 Bible book. Ba-dum, boom.
Nothing like a ripoff. I'm sorry. He just couldn't make anything original work. So he just pulls out an old tune from the hat.
Hey, Jaquel, I'm going to have a drink of soda. No, is that okay?
Yes, it's fine.
Okay. What do you think I was going to do?
I thought you were going to like blow in it and make like a whistling noise. And yeah, exactly. Try to do a song with an instrument.
Yeah. I could have had an accompaniment.
Exactly.
You could sing the Bible book song and I could play the accompaniment.
I could, but I also couldn't.
This soda is so good. I need to know, has anybody else had one of these sodas? They're like, I think it's like a Mexican soda. It is made in Mexico.
See, this is the stuff that makes time stamping our episodes so hard because we start transitioning to our topic and then we start talking about Mexican soda.
But this soda is so good. I need to know if anybody else has had this soda. It's Jarritos. Jarritos. And this flavor is Mandarin.
Wow.
Oh, Jaquel, it is so...
I'm so glad it's good.
It's so refreshing. I just feel refreshed. Okay, so just so you know, we are 6 minutes, 10 seconds.
All right.
And in just a second, now we're at 6 minutes, 15 seconds. Okay, so what book are we talking about today? 6 minutes, 15 seconds. Don't forget that.
Thank you. Okay. Today, we are talking about the book of Ruth.
Ruth.
Yes, we are going to an Old Testament narrative book.
Yeah, right?
It'll change things up a little bit.
What did we do last time? What book did we do last time?
I don't remember.
Wow.
It's been a while. It's been a while. I can start listing for you episodes we've done. I just don't remember the order of them.
So are you telling me that you at present have not memorized every one of the 260 some episodes that we've recorded?
That is absolutely correct.
What do you mean? Just a minute. I'm feeling a little nostalgic here. Give me just 1 second here. I know we're supposed to get. Oh, don't worry. I'll give you the time again.
Okay.
I got you covered. But I'm just thinking. Let's see.
You're just thinking. What was the last Bible book we did?
Well, no. This you probably do know. I was just thinking, like, what number episode? Okay, I said 260 something. Our last episode was 237.
Okay, we're getting there.
So, but seriously, like, you don't have all 238 episodes memorized. I'm really disappointed with you. Like, you should know that.
It's fair. I'll try to do better.
I'm even wondering, like, when was our last Bible book? Oh, okay, so we did the James episode. That was way back.
That's right.
May 7th.
That's right.
So that's perfect. We had an epistle, and now we're going to some Old Testament narrative.
Yes, and I, as I told you before the episode, I was recently reading something about Ruth.
Oh, yeah, that's
that
right.
I have been having a lot of trouble tracking down what it was I was just reading, but it was very insightful, and I told you, I suspect it was a book that Joe and I read called The Household and the War for the Cosmos by C.R. Wiley.
You know, I can help you.
It's true.
I have it on Kindle. I can just search that
book. It's really not that big of a deal.
It could be a huge deal, Jaquel. You don't know.
Anyways, because of what I was reading, I've been thinking a little bit more about this book, and I did read it in my devotions a few weeks ago, so I am very excited to talk about it.
I read it in my devotions months ago.
Yes.
Yeah, that's kind of what happened.
Wow. great background from you here.
I know. People just love that stuff. So
are we ready? Can we get into it? Can we start?
I mean, I guess. I was doing this search for you because this is just so fun.
Wow. This is the...
technology. People get to listen in on technology. No, Jaquel, it wasn't this book.
Okay.
So there is not one match found for the word Ruth in this book. So
okay.
Never mind. So Jaquel heard something about Ruth
Ruth that I guess I'll just claim for my own because I can't remember where I heard them.
Well, listen, just so everybody's aware, every thought that is shared on this episode in particular is completely original to either Jaquel or myself. We are both brilliant geniuses.
Yeah, that is definitely how we have to start this.
Okay, so just so you know, Jaquel, there's something I want to tell you.
Yes.
We're at 9 minutes right
now. Okay, thanks. All right, let's get into this. Okay, the book of Ruth, as we usually do when we get into a Bible book, because we are just zooming in on one particular book, we need to talk about some context of what is going on when we get into this book. What is happening in the history of God's people? What's going on in the world? And that is very important for the book of Ruth.
Are you telling me, Jaquel, that the books of the Bible are connected?
Yes.
They're intertwined?
Yes.
You mean like other books of the Bible have an impact on how you understand other books?
Yes.
All right. Thank you. That's good. You have learned well, young Padawan.
Well, you asked me really tough questions here, so it's hard to know how to answer them.
I know. That's like hard-hitting journalism right there.
Okay. So a big book.
A big book. It's a big book.
It's big in themes,
It's
too.
A horrifying book.
Yes. It is connected to the book of Ruth, a book that we need to talk about.
Ruth is not as horrifying. It is. There's some
there's some bad stuff. But the book,
not as much as in the other book.
As in Judges. That's what we're talking about. So we need to understand a little bit about Judges to understand the book of Ruth.
And Judges is, whoa.
It's an intense book.
Whoa.
With very dark things.
I was just Mom and I were just talking to Travis and Hannah the other day about the book of Judges and just about how crazy it is.
Yes.
There's some crazy stuff in the Bible, and Judges is where a good portion of it is found.
It is. There's a lot of messed up stuff, because what happens when you're going into Judges is the end of the book of Joshua.
So hold on a minute here. So Judges is connected with Ruth, and Joshua is connected with Judges?
That's right. Now you're getting it, Bubs.
I'm sorry. I'm having fun here.
Okay. So at the end of Joshua, the question is raised, are God's people going to remain faithful after Joshua, who was their military leader, after his death, as they have more leaders coming up, Judges? And the short answer is no. Because what happens that you see in the book of Judges is this vicious cycle plays out. So the people...
It's pretty repetitive.
It's very cyclical. So what happens is the people go through a period of apostasy. They turn away from God. They live in total disobedience and rebellion. Then they are enslaved. They are in bondage to a people. Then they repent.
It's funny how that works, right?
Yes. And then they are delivered through a judge. Yeah. And that's what happens through over and over and over again in the book of Judges.
You preach the book of Judges and it's a lot of repetition. Mm. Yeah.
So then the end of Judges leaves you with something else and another question. And it leaves the reader anticipating a king due to that last phase of the cycle, the judge who delivered. You got a temporary success of each judge, and so you're left wondering if a coming king will be able to return the people to faithfulness to God.
Yeah, now, so immediately, not immediately, but once you realize something that is crucial about interpreting the book of Ruth, it will help what Jaquel just said add a little more significance to your interpretation of the book of Ruth, because Ruth happens at the time of the judges.
Right.
And so if you consider what was going on in the time in history for the Israelites in Judges and compare it to Ruth, Ruth kind of gives you some individuals, some settings to compare to what's going on amongst all of Israel. So Israel is doing what is right in their own eyes. It's mayhem. And you see that happening in Judges. They have very little concern for the covenant of God and very little concern for faithfulness to God. And then you've got this one Israelite man, Boaz, who, what we will find out in the book of Ruth, actually does what's right in the eyes of the Lord. Mm. See, everybody, the narrative of the book of Judges is that everybody is doing what is right in their own eyes. But then here's this one Israelite man who wants to do what is right in the eyes of the Lord. Mm. Then of course, you've also got one Israelite woman, which we will get to, who does what is right in the eyes of the Lord. And then you've got this one town. So Bethlehem actually shows kindness to these two widows that come home, one of whom was not even one of their own. Mm-hmm. One was a stranger, a Moabitess. And so they do what is right in the eyes of the Lord. And then you've got one Gentile woman. Mm-hmm. Now, that's a fascinating contrast, because you've got a Gentile woman in contrast with Israel, the people of God. And this one Gentile woman, Ruth, she turns from the pagan ways of her ancestors to serve Yahweh. She does what is right in the eyes of the Lord. So, the majority of Israel is off doing whatever they want to do, living for themselves, living their best life now. Mm-hmm. And here in the book of Ruth, at the same time in history, you've got these individuals who are actually living in contrast to Israel. They're living how Israel ought to be living.
Right. And this goes back to this question that Judges leaves us wondering, like, is there a king coming? And is there a king who's going to help the people return to faithfulness?
Right.
And while Ruth does not answer that question, that comes a little bit later in the Old Testament, mm-hmm. it definitely contributes to it and prepares for what comes next, especially as we see how the book of Ruth ends.
It definitely gets you ready for it.
Yeah.
So as far as the inside cover, we always like to talk about inside cover. We've covered some important context now. What I call the inside cover is just kind of details about the book. So the author is, of course, Ruth. No, it's not Ruth. The author, rabbinic tradition claims that Samuel's the author, but this is unlikely due to the implied kingship of David, which is mentioned at the book of Ruth. Mm. So in light of Ruth 4:17-22, this is really, really unlikely. So really, we have to concede that as far as the human author, we really don't know who it is. Of course, this book was written ultimately by God. It's his... God, it's the God breathed word, mm-hmm. as Paul calls it. So, but we don't know for sure who the human author is.
We know the date roughly, yeah. because as the end gives right. us some really good clues. So we know that it was roughly 1010 BC or after, and 1010 BC was the accession of David to the right. throne. Yeah. And so again, from the end, when we get a genealogy yeah. that leads to David, we know that it would have had to have been after that.
Right.
And we also, like we said, we know it was during the time of the judges and before the time of monarchy.
Yeah. Now, the audience, as always, is the as always when it comes to the Old Testament, the audience is the Israelites. And the title, as I made a joke about it being the author, of course, it's not named after the author. It's named after one of the primary characters in it. So, like, the book of Joshua is named in honor of Joshua. The book of Ruth is named in honor of Ruth, or in connection with, mm-hmm. and the genre is, as Jaquel already mentioned, it's a historical narrative, but it's very theological. Yes. So the point being is that it's not just written for us to learn about the history. It's written to teach us something very important.
Right. Okay. So this kind of leads us into an outline of Ruth. What happened in Ruth? So chapter one starts, well, the story really begins and ends with Naomi. So chapter one kind of focuses on Ruth's loyalty to Naomi. But in chapter one, you started with Naomi, and at first you kind of think she's going to be the main character.
Jaquel, before we go any further, I have to ask you to do something for me throughout this whole episode.
Yes.
I need you to correct me. I know this is something very hard for you because
I will really
because I mean, like,
this.
I know that you generally think I'm as close to perfect as a human being can come. So,
I do. It's going to make me really nervous to correct you. I'm going to second guess myself. I think that I'm going to be the one that needs corrected.
Seriously, though, I always mix up Ruth and Naomi.
Yeah.
The names. I always do. It drives me crazy. It's like I keep thinking I for some reason I have in my head that because it's named after Ruth and it begins with this woman named. Begins with this woman named Naomi, but I keep thinking it begins with this woman named Ruth. And so I keep thinking that Ruth is the mother. And Jaquel, Ruth is not the mother.
No.
Okay. Are you aware of that?
Ruth
is
the
not the mother. Okay.
No.
So, I am probably going to mix them up. If I don't, it will be only by a miracle of
yes.
God. Like, I mean that serious. It yes. was so. Anyway, just so you know, I will do that.
All right. Okay. So the story begins with Naomi.
Yeah.
And Naomi's name, this is important,
yeah.
means pleasant or sweet. And her story
yeah.
begins on a sweet note, and it is incredibly short-lived as her life quickly descends into tragedy.
Well, okay, so as we said, the book of Ruth begins in the day when the judges ruled. There's a famine in the land. Man of Bethlehem in Judah goes to sojourn in the country of Moab. He and his wife and his two sons. It's like, oh, you
yeah.
know, I mean, there's a famine, so overall things are not good. But it's like, oh, there's this nice family here, two sons. It tells you the name of the man was Elimelech, name of his wife Naomi. Here you've got Elimelech and Naomi with the little Mally and Killian. I don't know. I don't think they shorten the names. Malin and Killian, right?
Yep.
And it says they're Ephrathites from Bethlehem and Judah. They went into the country of Moab, remained there. But Elimelech, the husband of Naomi, died.
Mm.
And she was left with their two sons. These took Moabite wives. The name of the one was Orpah, and the name of the other, Ruth. They lived there about 10 years, and both Malin and Killian died. Mm. So it's like the introduction to the book is, you know, it's kind of a sad tale right away.
It is. And this is something else I was mentioning to you before the episode. I think because we are so removed culturally from this context, we don't really grasp how massive of a tragedy this was for both Naomi
no.
and
Absolutely.
Ruth and Orpah. So for all of the men in their family to die, for all of these women to lose husbands and a father-in-law
yeah.
was the end of their provision, was the end of their income, was the end of their protection. Like, husbands and fathers were your police. They were your lawyers. Like,
yeah.
they were everything for you. Like, you were now cast off in society. Like, you... You had very, very few options now. You could, you know, just languish in poverty. You could beg. You could, you know, sell yourself to slavery or, like, try to find another husband. Like, your options were very, very limited for these women. So this is not, like, this adds a whole other depth to the tragedy these women experience.
And the way it's written, like, what really sticks out to me at the beginning of it is like, you've got these five verses that I'm trying to think cover how much, like, they cover over 10 years,
yeah,
right? So they lived there about 10 years. This was, it seems, after after Elimelech dies. So mm-hmm. Elimelech died. She was left with two sons. They took Moabite wives. They lived there about 10 years. So it's just this very brief introduction to this book, but a ton happens, and what happens is actually quite, you know, quite negative. I mean, mm-hmm. it's a very bitter situation. So, you know, you start, oh, there's this woman. Oh, they have to leave, you know, and then all of a sudden they have to leave because of famine, and things get worse and worse and worse. And so now here's Naomi. Are you impressed? I said the right name.
I'm very impressed.
Here's Naomi with Ruth and Orpah, her two daughters-in-law. And she finds out that in fact, there is food back where they're from. And she sets out to go to Judah, but she says to her two daughter-in-laws, look, you know, you guys, you go back to your family. Mm-hmm. Like, there's no point you stay with me. I mean, you go back to your family. And as things progress here, we come to find out that actually Naomi, as you said, is not the main character. It seems more like Ruth is the main character.
Yeah, because Orpah says, okay, I'll go home.
See ya.
Bye, Naomi.
Cheers, guys.
Ruth does something that would have been, again, we're missing this cultural context, would have been so radical, okay? So remember, she is not from the same people of Naomi. It's not like she's going back to her people. She was a Gentile.
She still is a Gentile, Jew. Yeah.
And so it would have been very risky for Ruth, in one sense, to go back or to go to a place where she is the foreigner. Yeah. But she is loyal to Naomi, and she goes.
And Naomi doesn't just go. She didn't just go, oh, no, I want to go with you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, sure. No, Naomi tries to get her to go. See, your sister-in-law, she says, has gone back to her people. I mean, Orpah left. Why don't you go? Mm-hmm. You go. And she says, and this is interesting, too. She says, see, your sister-in-law has gone back to her people and to her gods. Mm-hmm. Return after your sister-in-law. But what Ruth says here is of extreme significance. Really, I think, you know, these three verses might be some of the most important verses in the book. Ruth says, do not urge me to leave you or to return from following you. For where you go, I will go. Where you lodge, I will lodge. Your people shall be my people, and your God, my God. Where you die, I will die, and there will I be buried. May the Lord, that's Yahweh, the one true God, the God of Naomi, may the Lord do so to me and more also if anything but death parts me from you. So I mean, it and then it says when Naomi saw that she was determined to go with her, she's like, okay, fine.
Yeah. She said it. No more. Yeah. And this starts to reveal to us that actually the story of Naomi and Elimelech's family is more like a background for Ruth's testimony and her subsequent conversion.
Yeah. Now, I mean, the other thing too, I think to keep in mind here is that it would have been hard to leave Bethlehem, right? They left Bethlehem, Naomi and Elimelech. They left Bethlehem with their two sons because, you know, there was no food. And so she leaves. But then it also would have been hard to go home because she's coming home with nothing.
Yeah.
Like, she's coming home basically with a Gentile daughter-in-law.
Yeah.
No husband, no sons, no families, no nothing. Mm. But she heard there was food back there. God had blessed them with food. And so they head back.
Yeah. So there you go. You have
chapter one.
Ruth's loyalty to Naomi is really the main part of that. So then you get into chapter two, and we're going to meet a new character who is very important. We are going to meet Boaz and hear about his kindness to Ruth.
Yeah. And there's immediately, as I mentioned before, there's this immediate contrast between Boaz, the Israelite, and Ruth, the Moabitess. Mm-hmm. And this will prepare the reader for, a bit of a conflict between the two, which we see that in verses 1-3. Of chapter two.
Now, Boaz is introduced as a godly man of kindness, which is a little bit unexpected.
For sure.
But you find that in the way he treats his employees. So what you find out about Boaz is a wealthy, pretty successful guy, seems established in the community, is probably older, seems to be maybe even an elder in the city. Mm-hmm. And he's a gracious businessman.
Yeah. And I mean, like, he goes above and beyond with Ruth. And so it says, let's see, where are we at here? Verse 8. Boaz says to Ruth, listen, my daughter, do not go to glean in another field or leave this one, but keep close to my young women. Like, he just spots this Gentile who's there looking for gleanings.
Yeah, so let's back up a little bit. What is Ruth doing here?
Right.
So the poor people in this time, what they could
they
do is
they could support themselves.
They could go and glean from some of these fields in Israel and get, like, the leftovers, essentially. Yeah. And so Boaz owns these fields. They're doing well, and he has no obligation to let
anybody
Ruth take
gleaning.
Well, it's true,
yeah.
But certainly not to go above and beyond for this you know, this widowed like foreigner who again is like the lowest caste in Israelite society, but Boaz right from the beginning is set apart as this godly man of integrity.
Yeah, no, there are instructions about leaving the corners of your field for those who come to glean. But the thing is that like Boaz had no obligation to Ruth, who was just there seeking after gleanings. But he says, no, you know, don't leave. You stay here. And he says, and keep close to my young women. Let your eyes be on the field that they're reaping and go after them. And then it even goes on to say, he says, have I not charged the young man not to touch you? And when you're thirsty, go to the vessels and drink what the young men have drawn. So immediately Boaz is painted as this provider and protector.
Mm-hmm.
Wait, okay, so that's kind of two of the primary responsibilities of godly men, mm-hmm. is to provide and protect women. And so Boaz is clearly set up as a godly man here and a kind man. Through his actions towards Ruth.
Yeah, and there's also a connection between him and Ruth that are kind of established by two kind of verses you can compare in chapter 2. Because seemingly, like, on the first glance, it seems like Boaz and Ruth are very different. Mm-hmm. But maybe not so much. So in verse 11 of chapter 2, Boaz is talking to Ruth, and he tells her about the reputation that she has. He reveals some of the character of Ruth. And so Boaz says, all that you have done for your mother-in-law since the death of your husband has been fully told to me, and how you left your father and your mother and your native land and came to a people that you did not know before. In other words, Ruth has shown incredible integrity and kindness and righteousness.
And Boaz sees that.
Exactly. Yeah. Then you go to verse 20, and Naomi is talking to Ruth about Boaz, and she says about him, may he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead. And then Naomi also says, the man is a close relative of ours, one of our redeemers. So again, you have more, mm-hmm. maybe these two are more alike than you think.
So as we get into chapter 3, so let's see, we probably should have just, you know, mentioned the outline before, but so chapter 1 focuses on Ruth's loyalty to Naomi, and then chapter 2 focuses on Boaz's kindness to Ruth, and then chapter 3 focuses on Naomi's concern for Ruth. All right, so at the beginning of chapter 3, Naomi shows her concern for Ruth by giving her instructions about Levirate marriage. What is Levirate marriage, you ask?
Well,
if we go back to Deuteronomy 25, we find specific instructions about Levirate marriage. And basically, what Levirate marriage addressed was a situation such as this, where you've got this widow, and what is she supposed to do for her livelihood? What is she supposed to do how is she supposed to be provided for and protected? And so in Deuteronomy chapter 25, it says, if brothers dwell together, one of them dies and has no son, the wife of the dead man shall not be married outside the family to a stranger. Okay, remember, this seems strange to us, but this was a very different time, and they were not supposed to marry outside of their family, outside of their family line. So it says, her husband's brother shall go unto her and take her as his wife and perform the duty of a husband's brother to her. And the first son whom she bears shall succeed to the name of his dead brother, that his name may not be blotted out of Israel, and the family line will carry on. Now, there's allowances. It says, if the man does not wish to take his brother's wife, then his brother's wife shall go to the gate and elders. And there's other such things said about that. But that's not what's most important to know is that in this situation, when it concerns Ruth, there was a process by which if she was going to marry Boaz, it had to happen in a specific way. And so Naomi gives her instructions in chapter 3 about what to do concerning Levirate marriage. And Naomi's concern for Ruth is recognized by Boaz, because what happens is that actually he, based on the laws of Levirate marriage, he actually couldn't marry her, couldn't take her. He couldn't redeem her. He couldn't be her kinsman redeemer, not until they dealt with somebody else. So then, let's see, where is that now?
So that's in chapter 4.
Oh, that is not until we get to chapter 4.
But in chapter 3, we see Boaz's kindness mainly because of how things kind of happen with Ruth approaching Boaz about him.
Right.
About the Levirate marriage, about him being the kinsman redeemer. And she comes to him.
Right.
It seems weird to us. It's not as weird as it was back then. She comes to him while he's sleeping. And basically through, again, this made sense in cultural context, explain that he was the nearest kinsman redeemer, showed herself and essentially asked him to marry her.
And he says, I will redeem you.
Right.
He says, remain tonight and in the morning if he will redeem you. Oh, sorry. There was another. See this? No, that's not in chapter four. That is in chapter three.
Okay. I thought you meant like the actual interchange.
No. I was talking about what went down between. So he shows his kindness to her in saying, I will redeem you. I will be your kinsman redeemer. But the problem is there's a redeemer nearer to you. There's somebody else who qualifies first. So we need to talk to that individual. So he says, you stay. And if he will redeem you, then fine, let him do it. But if he's not willing to redeem you, he says, as Yahweh lives, I will redeem you. So basically, you know, she goes to him basically propositioning him to see if he will be her kinsman redeemer. And he says, yes, I will. But we need to do the honorable thing. We need to follow the law of mm-hmm. God. And we need to see if this other individual would like to redeem you. And if he does, then that's the way it has to be. So it's kind of funny. Like, I think you mentioned this to me before. I don't think you've mentioned this in this episode yet. But I think some people, you know, paint the Book of Ruth as this really romantic encounter. It doesn't really sound so much like that to me. It's not like there's no romance, but he basically just says, you know, yeah, I would be happy to be your kinsman redeemer, but first we need to see if this individual was, and if he doesn't want to, then fine.
Yes, I think there is a large problem, especially with how Ruth is taught to teenage girls these days, that tries to impose some meaning on the text and make this into, like a romance story, the way we think about this. And I don't think it's a romance story at all. Maybe we can call it a love story, but not love the way we're thinking about it in the 21st century. Like, this is a story about much bigger themes and about a lot more stuff going on than like, oh, Boaz just saw Ruth. It was love at first sight. And then they got married. No, that's not what's happening in this book at all. It is a story of suffering and sorrow, of, you know, of covenant and courage. Like, there's a lot. It's an amazing story. But don't treat this as just like a cute love story.
Yeah, you treat it more as what love truly is, something that is absolutely connected to actions. And that's kind of what's going on here, right? Like Boaz is prepared to do what is necessary to see that Ruth is cared for. Like, that seems to be his primary issue. Mm-hmm. Like Boaz continues to be painted as this honorable man who's his primary concern is that Ruth is cared for. So just one last time, you're going to get the outline down pat because we keep repeating it every time we go to the next point, but I think that's good. So chapter one focuses on Ruth's loyalty to Naomi, right? Ruth insists on going with Naomi when she could have gone back to her own family. Then chapter two focuses on Boaz's kindness to Ruth, okay, with the whole gleaning situation and him being willing to take care of her. And then chapter three focuses on Naomi's concern for Ruth. So now she shares this instruction with this Gentile woman who, of course, wouldn't have been familiar with Levirate marriage to see if whether or not Boaz would take her as his wife, whether he would be his kinsman redeemer. So chapter three focuses on Naomi's concern for Ruth. And then chapter four focuses on God's providential plan through Ruth. So you see, Ruth is at the center of each chapter.
Yep.
Ruth's loyalty to Naomi, Boaz's kindness to Ruth, Naomi's concern for Ruth, and then God's providential plan through Ruth.
Right. Okay. So the start of chapter four, you see Boaz doing exactly what he said he would do. And that is him finding this other kinsman redeemer who's closer, or this other relative who is closer, and giving him the opportunity to redeem Ruth. He does things very above board. Right. There are a few things that seem a little odd to us here, but again, all make sense in this Israelite culture. Basically, what happens is they find out that he does not want to, this other guy does not want to redeem Ruth. And so the way is cleared for Boaz. And we see Boaz just demonstrating his godliness as he continues to do the right thing, trusting that God will work out his goodwill. He didn't try to take things into his own hand, but he very patiently trusted the Lord.
And then at the end of the book of Ruth, the focus comes back in on Naomi. So it ends in verse 13. Boaz takes Ruth, and that kind of, you know, it seems to be okay. Things are winding down here, but then she bears a son. And then now listen to what the women say. Like the women say to Naomi, blessed be the Lord who has not left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel. So you've got Ruth starting out with, and I said to Jaquel beforehand, this always makes me mindful of a book that John Piper wrote on the Book of Ruth, and it was called A Sweet and Bitter Providence. Mm. So things start off bitter, right? Like the you've got this family, and all of a sudden just death overwhelms. You got famine, you've got death that overwhelms this family. A very bitter providence. God seems to be working here, but it's bitter.
Right.
But then at the end, it's a sweet providence, because even in the midst of all this difficulty and death, basically, it turns out in the end with the women saying to Naomi, "Blessed be the Lord who's left you this day without a redeemer, and may his name be renowned in Israel." He says, "He shall be to you a restorer of life and a nourisher of your old age, for your daughter-in-law who loves you is more to you than seven sons, has given birth to him." And then Naomi took the child and laid him on her lap and became his nurse. And the women of the neighborhood gave him a name, saying, "A son has been born to Naomi." They named him Obed. He was the father of Jesse, the father of David.
Boom. And there you go. We're like right back to the beginning. Whoa, whoa. This is way bigger than just this story between these two random people. No, through Ruth, a Gentile, God's plan for a king after his own heart was accomplished. Like, whoa, this is David's grandfather here. Ruth was David's great-grandmother.
It's so crazy. Like, we're so familiar with books of the Bible, but like when Raymond and I said that last word, David, and you went boom, it was just, I kind of like, I had like a overwhelming of emotion, like just like, oh, like that. If you didn't know what was coming, like I knew what was coming, it still hit me in the face. But if you didn't know what was coming, you're just like, what?
Yeah.
What? Like, and then of course it ends with this genealogy, and we always think, oh, boring genealogies. Oh my goodness, that genealogy, right? Starting with Perez, and then, you know, finally going to Boaz and Obed and Jesse and Jesse and David. And it's just like, oh my goodness, all along, while we got this, I'm trying to think of how to describe it. Like, we narrowed in on this story of this one little family, one individual, this one little family, and all of a sudden, then at the very end, it just, like, you just zoom way out.
Right.
And it's just like, whoa. Don't mind me. There was my soda bottle. Yeah, I'm getting a little animated here. You zoom way out, and it's just like, no. This story about this one little individual was actually helping us to see the story of Jesus.
Right. And this is also why it's so important to understand the context. Like, if you didn't understand what was going on with the judges and the failure of God's people, and just like the question, like, is there a king coming? Right. Like, this, you'd lose so much significance of this book.
Yeah, and that was the thing. Like, at the end of Judges, you're wondering, is there going to be a king?
Yeah.
Right. And it's just like, okay, now you read the Book of Ruth and it's like, oh, yeah.
Yeah.
A king is coming, and you just wait. I mean, David is going to be an amazing king, but you just wait till an even more amazing king comes from the line of David. So
it's true. And this is one of the biggest themes that we see in the Book of Ruth, that overwhelmingly, God is provident.
Yeah.
Through every stage of history, through every period of God's people, God is provident over it all.
Yeah. Oh, I again, like that. I have you even read that book by Pipe?
I don't think so.
Pipes. Piper. But it's so true. Like, Ruth is truly a story of bitter and sweet providence. There's no question. Like again, it's like you seem to be narrowing in on this one family, and it's just like, oh, what's going on with this? And then these people will die. And it seems like there's all these circumstances. You go, man, there's a lot of coincidences in there. It's like, no, there are no coincidences. And I mean, you know, truly, in the life of a Christian, we definitely learn that there are no coincidences. God is working in all things.
Yes, especially through some of the stories of the greatest suffering in Scripture. Like, the two people that come to mind are Job and Joseph.
Yeah.
And both of those men, a huge theme of their story is the providence of God and God's sovereignty as a comfort to them. And I think that's just so abundantly clear through the Book of Ruth as well.
Yeah. And then just the only other thing to consider is the connection between Boaz and Jesus. I mean, Boaz as a kinsman redeemer, redeeming this woman who basically had no hope apart from the help of another individual. And Jim George, who wrote, what was that book he wrote?
The Bare Bones Bible Handbook.
Yeah. Woo. Whoa, we're just
connecting. Knowledge,
the Bare Bones Bible Handbook, which is a great little book. It's been a long time since I've read it, but I remember finding it very helpful. He says, like Boaz, Jesus is related to us by his physical birth, right, as a human, able to pay the price of redemption, willing to redeem and able to redeem. And like Ruth, you must choose to accept redemption and leave the transaction to Jesus, who makes the redemption a reality. So, yeah, I mean, that is story of Ruth. It's just a, I mean, it's got everything.
It does.
It's truly got everything. But ultimately, it speaks to us of Jesus, which is what the whole Bible does, which is why we're doing this whole Bible book series. So hope you've enjoyed this. And if people want to reach out to offer insights or suggestions,
yep.
or if they have questions, or if they want to recommend resources, mm-hmm. or,
they can email us at jacquel@ageofminority.com.
Where can they go?
Or sean@ageofminority.com. They can go to our website, ageofminority.com.
Sure.
They can find us on social media, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Yeah. And if they have nice things to say,
yes.
they can go to iTunes and leave us a 5-star rating and review. And if they have bad things to say, they can just keep those to themselves.
Just, you know what your mother said, if you can't say something nice, don't say anything at all.
Look, you're allowed to have opinions, you're allowed to have standards, but just keep them to yourself.
Exactly. All right then, until next week, Jacquel.
This has been Age of Minority.